We are actually discussing on Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So, should I give a summary for the benefit of the newcomers? Actually, what I'm discussing is the summary. Actually, Madhurya Kadambini discusses about the gradual elevation in devotional service. How the process of devotional service, the practicing the process of devotional service, one gradually elevates from one stage to other, which begins with Shraddha. Then next to Shraddha, the next stage is Sadhu Sangha. Then after Sadhu Sangha is Bhajana Kriya. Then Anartha Nivritti, then Nishtha, then Ruchi, then Ashakti, then Bhava, and then Prema. Everybody knows that, there is no need to elaborate that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the beginning is describing that how devotional service, the creeper of the devotional creeper, Bhakti Lata, as it sprouts, first it develops two leaves, and those two leaves are Kleshagni and Shubhada. Kleshagni, that is, as soon as one begins to render devotional service, as soon as one becomes engaged in devotional service, then all his sufferings disappear. And devotional service automatically brings all auspiciousness. So Shubhada means all auspiciousness, attainment of auspiciousness. The pleasure, the suffering, has been analyzed to be of five types. There are five kinds of suffering. This he actually took from Patanjali. Patanjali's yoga aphorism, yoga sutra. These analysis of Patanjali of klesha are of five types, known as avidya, asmita. Avidya means ignorance, and this ignorance is and due to that ignorance, a living entity considers his body to be his self. His gross body forgets his real identity due to the ignorance, first thing is that due to his ignorance, he forgets his real identity. What is the real identity of a living entity? The living entity's real identity is that he is a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Jiver Sharufai Krishna Nityadash. Then Ashmita, Ashmita is the false ego, to identify oneself with the gross body is called Ashmita. Then third is, third reasons for klesha or suffering is Rag, means attachment. Attachment to the objects that are favorable to our sense gratification. That's called rag. Like you all are familiar with the expression anurag. Raga, and then the fourth one is called dvesha. Dvesha means aversion. So dvesha is opposite to raga. Raga is attachment to the objects that are favorable to our sense gratification, and dvesha is aversion to the things that are detrimental to our sense gratification. Sometimes in Bhagavad Gita, this too has been expressed as iccha and dvesha. Iccha dvesha samuttena dandha mohina bharata. So rag, and fourth is dvesha. And then fifth is abhinivesh. Abhinivesh is attachment or absorption. a very strong attachment to the objects of the senses and inability to give them up. So our attachment to this material sense gratification and the objects of a sense gratification and the inability to give them up is the abhinivesh. So in this way, according to Patanjali, there are five causes of suffering, five roots of suffering, or five types of suffering, the pleasure. Avidya, Asmita, Raga, Dvesha and Abhinivesh. So then he describes auspiciousness are of 12 types. There are 12 considerations of auspiciousness. The first one is Vishaya Vitrishna. Vishaya means objects of a sense gratification, and Vitrishna means detachment, aversion. So detachment to material enjoyment. Then the second one is Bhagavad Unmukhata. One becomes attracted to the Supreme Personality of God. In one hand, he becomes detached from material enjoyment, and at the same time, he becomes attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhakti Pareshanu Bhavo Virakti Ramnatrasya. As one becomes attached to devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes virakto, or disgusted with material sense gratification. This actually develops in proportion, or rather, they're inversely proportionate. As devotion increases, the desire for sense gratification decreases. So it is a natural phenomenon, and which he will explain later on, that how the sign of anarthani vritti will become naturally manifest by the symptoms of different attraction to the holy name. Anyway, that we'll discuss briefly later on. Then the third aspect of auspiciousness is shubha. I'm sorry, anukulla. Auspiciousness or shubha is anukulla. Anukullasya sankalpa pratikullasya vivarjana. Anukul means things that are favorable. So, favorable attitude towards devotional service. One automatically becomes favorably disposed to devotional service. So these are the subha. As I explained, the kleshagni and shubhada. So klesha has been explained, there are five types of kleshas, and now he's explaining 12 types of shubhas, auspiciousness. So the third aspect of shubha is anukulla. Then fourth aspect is kripa, mercy. And he becomes merciful towards other living entities. Then kshama, forgiveness. He becomes forgiving. Now, these are also the divine qualities that automatically becomes manifested in a devotee. Kshama, forgiveness, then shatota, truthfulness. One becomes truthful. On one hand, we can see that these are actually the development of brahminical qualities. Samo, damo, tapo, solcham, etc. Then sarolata, simplicity. Samota, equanimity. Brahma bhuta prasannatma na sochati na kamshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhakti labhute para. So this is how this has been confirmed, that when one develops devotional attitude towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he automatically becomes equally disposed to everyone. Why? Because that is the sign of Brahma Bhuta platform, because he sees everybody from a spiritual angle of vision, not on a material point of, not on a material platform. In the material platform there is a question of duality, but on the spiritual platform there is no duality. In the spiritual platform there is perfect equanimity. I shouldn't say no duality, because then our conclusion of our philosophy will be defeated. But duality of love and hate, the duality of attachment, attraction and repulsion, this duality is removed. But one actually becomes situated on a platform of transcendental duality. Transcendental duality is the duality between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual equality, at the same time difference. Difference and similarity. Then fortitude, gravity, devotee naturally becomes determined, he's firm, he's resolute on his determination. Devotee is grave. As one develops devotional service, he becomes grave. He becomes respectful, he becomes humble, and he becomes pleasing to all. So these are the subha, the auspicious signs, or the signs of auspiciousness that become manifest in a devotee. Like it has been pointed out in Srimad Bhagavatam, Jashasti Bhaktir Bhagavat Takinchana, Sarvai Gunai Satsra Samashati Shura, Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahat Guna, Mano Rathyanashati Dhavata Vahi. Jashasti Bhakti Bhagavat Takinchana, when one develops devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarvai Gunai Satsra Samashati Shura, all the divine qualities of the demigods, suras, become manifest in him. Then bhajana kriya, or execution of devotional service, is of two types, nishthita and anishthita. Actually it should be made in other way around actually. First should be anishthita. Anishthita means, the word is coming from nishtha, and the suffix a or on is actually a negative indication. It's an indicative of a negative. Like nishtha means steadiness, to become steady, and anishthita means the absence of steadiness or unsteady. So unsteady devotional service has six different aspects. Those six different aspects are known as utsahomai, ghanutavela, budha vikalpa, vishaya shangara, niyamakshama and tarangarangini. They have been elaborately described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Utsahamai, saying that the devotional service in the beginning, one is very enthusiastic. But that enthusiasm is actually false enthusiasm. It's not based, it's not founded on real appreciation of devotional service, but mainly due to the novelty of devotional service. Novelty is the process of devotional service. Utsahamai, one becomes very enthusiastic to render devotion, in devotional service. Just like a little boy, when he gets a new book, he becomes very attracted to the book. He is with the book, he holds the book all the time, he lives through the book. Even at night he holds on to the book while sleeping. So in the beginning stage, a devotee experiences that kind of enthusiasm, but that enthusiasm is not really founded on real appreciation for devotional service, which is known as utsahamai. Then ghanotarala. Sometimes this enthusiasm is intense and sometimes the enthusiasm is feeble, is faint. So that's the second stage. And then buddha vikalpa. One is the stage of indecision. He can't figure out what he actually should do, whether he should stay at home in his house, being situated in household life, or he should give up home and go to Vrindavan or move into a temple. So the indecision, sometimes he thinks that he should actually leave everything. After all, this is Grihamandha Kupam. And he should leave his family, his wife and children and become fully absorbed in devotional service. But then he feels, well, after all, my father is old and my mother is... my father is invalid and my mother is old. And it shouldn't be right to leave them right now. So after they... After my father and mother disappear, then I will become fixed. I'll leave and go to Vrindavan. And regarding that, I just remembered one very nice story, very nice incident actually, which was narrated by Raghubir Prabhu the other day in a class in Vrindavan. Let me see if I can remember clearly. Krishna told Narad that, Narad, bring some devotee to me. Bring some devotee back to me. I'm really feeling the separation from a devotee. I'm feeling really lonely. So just bring one devotee. Anyway, I mean, if I miss some points, those who remember, please fill in those gaps. So, then Narad went and he found one devotee. Devotee means he was not really very fixed up, but Narad thought, you know, that since Krishna wanted, let me take this one back. So he went and asked this devotee, please come to Vaikuntha. Then that person said, that's very nice. Yeah, I'm ready to go. But you see, there's one problem. My son, he's quite young as yet. Unless he grows up, I can't really leave him. So Narad Muni asked, how old is he? He said, he's only about 6 years old. So he said, okay. So when do you think you'll be ready? Yeah, he'll be ready to, he'll grow up and he'll be ready to leave him. So he said, well, let him, I said, another 13, 14 years, let him become 19, 20 years old, and then I'll be able to go. So Narad Muni said, okay, I'll come in here now. So after about 20 years, 14 years, Narad Muni came. Then he said, okay, so now your son is grown up, he's working, he's self-sufficient, so you come with me to Vaikuntha. So he said, well, you see, I'm all prepared to go, but I have one more thing to do. That is, let me get my son married. So Narad Muni said, okay. So after a while, Narad Muni came back, his son is married. So then he said, well, actually, let him at least have one son. So in this way, so finally the man died and he became his next life to become a dog. So Narad Muni came and told him, so please come to Vaikuntha. The dog said, yeah, you see, actually I would like to go, but my master is away, so unless he comes back, I cannot go. So in this way, the living entities never really feel prepared to go back to the spiritual sky. They always find some excuse to remain in the material nature. Although he's suffering, although he's in a very, very hellish condition, and he can so easily be free from that hellish condition, but still he doesn't want to. So, anyway, the stage of buddha vikalpa is the state of indecision. He can't decide what he should do, whether he should stay at home or whether he should become fully involved in Krishna consciousness. Then Vishaya Sangara, the combat with Vishaya, the objects of the senses. Sangara means fight or war. War with Maya. He wants to become detached, wants to become free, he doesn't want to become influenced by the allurements of Maya. But sometimes he's defeated. Then comes niyamakshama, the inability to uphold his vows. He takes different vows, he will chant so many rounds, he will offer so many obeisances, he will do so many things to become fixed up in Krishna consciousness, but he's at the end of the day, he's unable to uphold his vows. So that is called Vishaya Sangara. Niyamakshama. And then the next stage is called Tarangarangini. A devotee is naturally appreciated by others. As one develops his attachment to devotion, as one develops his attachment, or as one makes spiritual advancement, a devotee becomes very attractive to others, and people appreciate him, his qualities. And he, the distinction and adoration and profit that come to him, he begins to enjoy them. So this is called taranga rangini. Taranga means waves. The waves in the ocean of material enjoyment are appreciation, distinction, adoration, and profit. And he begins to float in that wave, in those waves, enjoying the waves of material facilities. So these are the six kinds of unsteady devotional service, anishthita bhakti. Now I'll go into the how this chapter, which I was actually supposed to, this is some of the prelude to today's topic. No, not really. There is some more. Anyway, I will briefly go through these points also. Like devotional services of two kinds, mixed devotional service or impure devotional service and pure devotional service. When devotional service is mixed with a desire for material enjoyment, liberation, or mystic power, the attainment of mystic power, then it is called mixed devotional service. But when the devotional service is free from those impurities, then it is called pure devotional service. Pure devotional service has three stages. Those three stages are Devi Bhakti, or rather Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti. Devotional service in practice, devotional service out of spontaneous sentiment, and devotional service out of pure love for Krishna. then the attainment of different stages of bhakti has been described here as sadhana bhakti removes all distresses and brings all auspiciousness. The sadhana bhakti actually is kleshabhni and shubhada. Sadhana bhakti removes all distresses and brings all auspiciousness. Bhava bhakti makes one realize that liberation is insignificant compared to devotional service and is very rare. Rupa Goswami described these two aspects as so first of all, actually this is from Nectar of Devotion. Rupa Goswami is explaining that the devotional service is kleshabhni, shubhada, then moksha lobhuta krit, sudur labha. The first two aspects, kleshabhni, shubhada, falls in the sadhana bhakti category. The next two aspects, moksha lobhuta krit, moksha lobhuta, moksha means liberation, lohu means becomes minimized. Liberation, even liberation becomes insignificant compared to devotional service. A devotee realizes that in the bhava bhakti platform. In the bhava bhakti stage, he realizes that even liberation is rather insignificant compared to devotional service, and devotional service is very rare. Shu du labha. And prema bhakti gives transcendental joy and attracts Krishna. This transcendental prema bhakti gives transcendental joy and attracts Krishna. Krishna karshani cha. Kleshabhni, shubhada, moksha labhuta krit, sudur labha. The fifth one in Sanskrit I'm forgetting. Does anybody remember the fifth one? Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah. Sangrananda Visheshatma, Krishna Arshani. Sangrananda Visheshatma. It gives, in prema bhakti stage one, experiences transcendental joy. Chandra Ananda Visheshatma and Moksha Lokuta and Krishna Akarshan. And this Prema Bhakti actually attracts even Krishna. Krishna becomes attracted to the devotee or the devotion of the devotee. The devotee is so powerful, that's why devotee attracts Krishna. And that's why devotional service is so rare. Krishna gives liberation very easily, but he doesn't want to give devotion. Why? Because Krishna himself becomes subjugated or subordinate, subservient to the devotee. Then Shravana Bhakti has two stages, Vaidhi Bhakti, Radhanuga Bhakti. Then Shravana Bhakti has been divided into 64 angas, but mainly there are 9 divisions. Those 9 divisions are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnam, Smaranam, Padu, Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Darshanam, Shattham, Artham, Devanam. Now, Anartha Nivritti, first the definition of Anarthas. There are four kinds of Anarthas. And the Anarthas arising from sin, Anarthas arising from piety, Anarthas arising from offenses, and anarthas arising from devotional service. Imperfect, anarthas arising from imperfect devotional service. Four types of anarthas can be eradicated in 5 ways. That is, egodesha vartini, bohudesha vartini, prayiki, purna, and atyantiki. Egodesha vartini, that one anartha is taken care of. Bohudesha vartini is many anarthas are taken care of. Then prayiki, the anarthas are generally removed. Purna, the anarthas are completely removed. And atyantiki, the anarthas are absolutely removed. And they are actually the results of different stages of devotion. In the bhajana kriya, the ekadesha vartini anartha nivritti. At the stage of bhajana kriya, one particular anartha is taken care of.
or eradicated.
And in this nishtha stage, or here it's been explained that on a, with the appearance of nishtha, the eradication is pervasive, or many anasthas are removed. The appearance of rati or bhava, the eradication is general. They are generally removed. With the appearance of prema, the anasthas are completely removed. And with the attainment of the lotus feet of the Lord, with the attainment of the lotus feet of Krishna, the anasthas are absolutely removed. Very scientifically. Now, five impediments to nishtha. So, anasa nivritti. Now, the nishtha, there are five types of, five impediments to nishtha. Now, why we cannot become fixed up in devotional service? That has been explained here. There are five types of impediments. One is known as loy. Loy means sleep. While hearing, while chanting, hearing and remembering, shravanam, kirtanam and smaranam, when one tends to fall asleep. And actually it's very obvious. We notice it, like, that's one thing I have noticed, the devotees never suffer from insomnia. Because as soon as they may not, even if they're suffering from insomnia, as soon as this sits in the Bhagavatam class, immediately they'll doze off to sleep. there is a story behind it also. Don't ask me where it's from, because I never really read it. I heard it. Kumbhakarna, Ravan's brother, was a great sleeper. He was the shelter of Nidra Devi. Nidra Devi is the personification of sleep, the goddess of sleep. So Nidra Devi, Kumbhakarna was Nidra Devi's most favorite shelter. But when Ramchandra killed Kumbhakarna, then Nidra Devi became homeless, became a refugee. So she went to Ramchandra and asked, "Now you killed Kumbhakarna, so where shall I go?" So Ramchandra told him, "Wherever there is a discussion of Bhagavatam, you can go there. You will decide wherever there is discussion about the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Therefore, people tend to fall asleep whenever there is Bhagavat Katha. So loy means mental inactivity or sleep. Loy refers to a tendency to sleep during kirtan, shravan and smaran. And the tendency to sleep is from kirtan, the tendency is more while shravan, while listening. And it tends to be even more while remembering. So it goes in that order. Then vikshep, or restlessness. Becoming restless due to material attachment. Restless to listen to the glorification of the Lord. Vikshep refers to affinity for material topics while performing kirtan, etc. And the affinity to indulge in material topics while kirtan is going on, or shravan is going on. And they can't do the smaran, remember. So we should be careful. And during the Bhagavatam class we shouldn't speak about it. We shouldn't whisper. then aprapipatti, spiritual indifference. Aprapipatti refers to the state of being unable to perform kirtan in spite of the absence of lay or vikshep. Even though the lay and vikshep is not affecting us anymore, but still we are unable to perform shravan, kirtan and smaran. That's called spiritual indifference. Due to our spiritual indifference, although we are not falling asleep, and although we are not really affected by the material attachments or material topics, but still we are unable to fully indulge in hearing and chanting. Due to our spiritual indifference. Then the fourth one is kashaya, or sinful habits. Kashaya means the tendency to indulge in anger, greed, pride and other unworthy habits. Due to we are involved in Krishna consciousness, but still we are affected by lust, greed and anger. That's called kashaya. Then rasashad, taste of material enjoyment. Rasashvada refers to inability to absorb the mind in kirtan when one gets the opportunity for material sense pleasure. Like whenever there is a tendency, whenever there is a prospect of sense gratification, we just drop our shravanam and kirtanam and just run for that. Rasashvada. Actually, the literally it means rasa is of the taste of the tongue, and the tendency or desire to relish the tongue. And you notice, like, as soon as there is some prospect of prasad, of course prasad is all right, we immediately drop everything and run. So, the symptom of steadiness is the absence of the above mentioned bad habits. At the time, one is completely free from the influence of tamo and rajagunas. Situated in sattva, since all the impurities are completely removed, however, at the stage of bhava only, this means that the slight presence does not act as an obstacle at this stage. Even there, if they're present in a limited extent, in a very little presence of these things, do not really obstruct one's devotional service. So when one becomes free from these impediments, one becomes fixed up in his devotional service. So what it means, finally, nishchita bhakti. Now if we analyze from this point, then you can see that when one becomes situated, when in nishtha stage, when one becomes fixed up in devotional service, he won't actually display these symptoms. Lay, vikshep, apratipatti, kashaya and rasashvara. He won't fall asleep. He'll actually conquer sleep. This has been previously, in one of the previous chapters, it has been described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that just as when one starts to chew sugar cane. Of course, this example is not very relevant to most of you, but in India, if most of the kids have tasted sugar cane. They love, as a child in India, you always love to have sugar cane. So when one gets the taste of the sugar cane, then it becomes very difficult for him to give up chewing it. So similarly, as soon as one gets the taste of devotional service, then he can't give it up. So he can't stop it. That means he forgets eating, he forgets sleeping, he becomes indifferent towards material allurements, he becomes unaffected by his habits or by detrimental affinities in himself, like lust, greed, anger. They become completely subdued and he becomes completely indifferent to any prospect of material enjoyment. So that is the stage of devotion, of nishthita bhakti, or steady devotional service. So, okay, so I will stop now. Does anybody have any comment or question? Yes. No, no. Sadhana bhakti has two. Sadhana bhakti actually means devotional service and practice. So this practicing stage of devotional service again has two stages. One is Vaidhi Bhakti and the other is Raganuga Bhakti. The Vaidhi Bhakti is when one is following the rules and regulations under the direction of the spiritual master. And that is the Vaidhi Bhakti. Or not only this spiritual master, but the spiritual masters, line of spiritual masters. So that is the Vaidhi Bhakti. But then when one, due to the practice of devotional service, becomes spontaneously attracted to those practices, then that is the Raganuga stage. And Bhava-bhakti? Yeah. You see, as Prabhupada is explaining in Nectar of Devotion, he is saying in the Raganuga stage, he will readily wake up before 3 o'clock. And he will get ready for attending Mangal Arati. Whereas in the Vaidhi Bhakti, he had to set the alarm, and you know, like even then he didn't get up. The temple commander came and dragged him out of the bed, forced him to the bathroom. Right? So that's why he was pushed into doing that. But in the Raganuga stage, he spontaneously does that because he develops some sort of spontaneous attachment, spontaneous liking to those practices. But Bhava Bhakti is the experience of spiritual emotion for the Supreme Lord. That he doesn't experience in the Raganuga stage. Like for example, this Romanchakam Pashu Tarango Bhajo, that is the Bhava Bhakti practice. Like his tears will, like he will feel some unique feelings for Krishna. And as a result of those feelings, you know, he will go through, you know, certain, he will experience certain emotions, certain sentiments, some spiritual sentiments based on Krishna. So that is the Bhava Bhakti.
There are some
Gaudiya
Vaishnavas that practice for the future state of meditation state becomes the state of Raganuga. So how can one know? He's getting up and
right. Yeah, that has a different connotation in a sense. You see, the way the residents, especially the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan, render their service to Krishna is called Ragatmika Bhakti. So, following that, you know, process of devotion, like following that Radhatmika is the Raganuga. Like what they do is, Radhatmika is that their basic attachment to Krishna is based on certain specific relationship, right? That a certain attachment, they have a spontaneous, you know, they are situated in the eternal relationship with Krishna. Or they are Nitya Siddhas, therefore they are situated in eternal relationship with Krishna. So that is Ragatmika. And when one follows that path, follows the path of a gopi, that is, according to these people, that's their Raganuga. But in our sampradaya, especially Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, completely rejected that. Yeah, the way they practice it. Because this is artificially done. You see, Sarup, you see, Sarup is a matter of, you know, Sarup Siddhi is a matter of, you know, development, spiritual development. We can't forcibly, you know, claim our Sarup. You see, we cannot say, you know, like, we cannot say, this is my relationship with Krishna. Right? We can't, in plain and simple words, we can't get crash into the spiritual sky. Right? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used the expression, Echoropaka. Echor is a green jackfruit. Right? So green jackfruit is green. Now sometimes we should beat the green jackfruit to pass it as a ripe one. And when people in the market, you see, they see it soft, so they think, you know, like it has become ripe, although, you know, because externally it appears to be ripe, you know, or, you know, it's kind of, it gives the impression of being ripe due to the softness, but actually it's not ripe. And so similarly, these process that they are practicing has been rejected by our, you know, our line. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave another example. He said that the spiritual development is actually a matter of development of our, you know, inner consciousness. Right? By some external practices we cannot really force it. Or by pretension we cannot force it. For example, say shedding tears is not the only criterion. The feeling behind the tears is the main consideration. Like there are two types of tears. One is called premashru and the other is called mayikashru. The ashru, the tears for maya. Like that somebody lost something and he's crying. Right? Now is this tear same as a tear that is flowing from a devotee's eyes? No. Devotee's eye, the tears the devotees are shedding, that is premashru. The tears of love for Krishna, not tears for their love for Maya, right? So tears is not the consideration, right? The main consideration is the inner feeling. And when that inner feeling, inner, you know, Krishna consciousness or relationship or attachment to Krishna develops, then the symptoms will automatically become manifest. But by externally imitating the symptoms, we cannot develop the inner feeling. And he so yesterday we discussed the five different types of impediments to nishtha. They are loya. What is the meaning of loya? Sleep. Then the next one is vikshep. Vikshep means restlessness. Vikshep refers to affinity for material topics while performing kirtan, etc. Like, as soon as the Bhagavatam class starts, one falls asleep. But then as soon as a material topic comes up, he wakes up. So that is the sign of vikshep. He doesn't have the attachment to listen to Krishna Katha, but he has very strong attachment to listening to materialistic topics. Apratipatti, spiritual indifference. Apratipatti refers to a state of being unable to perform kirtan in spite of absence of lie or vikshep. Even though one is not feeling sleepy while doing shavanam, kirtanam and smaranam, and although he has overcome restlessness, still he can't fix his mind in shravanam and kirtanam and smaranam. Then kaushalya, sinful habits. tendency to indulge in anger, greed, pride, and other unworthy habits. In Rosh Hashanah, taste of material enjoyment, and Rosh Hashanah refers to inability to absorb the mind in Kirtan when one gets the opportunity for material sense pleasure. Due to a taste for material enjoyment, inability to be absorbed in Krishna Katha. So this we discussed yesterday. The symptoms of steadiness is the absence of the above mentioned bad habits. So nishtha is actually nishtha means absence of these things. When one comes to the platform of nishtha, then he is not affected by these things. Laya, Bikshep, Apratipatti, Kashaya, and Vashashana. So that is the sign of nishtha. So nishthita bhakti or nishtha is of two types, shakshad bhakti vartini and tadanukul bostu vartini. Shakshad bhakti vartini means concerning direct bhakti, concerning bhakti directly. Nishtha, what is the meaning of nishtha? Steadiness. So one feels steady towards direct devotion and the next, or the steadiness is towards the objects that are favorable to devotion. Shakshat bhakti vartani and concerning elements favorable to bhakti. Tad anukul, tad anukul. Bostu Bostini. Then steadiness in bhakti itself has three divisions. They are kayiki, vachiki, and manashi. The bodily, vocal, and mental. The first is bodily. One feel steady in rendering bodily, rendering devotional service physically, then rendering devotional service through his voice, that is kirtan, etc. Or kirtan, actually kirtan doesn't only mean singing, even preaching is kirtan, talking to people about Krishna is kirtan. And mental is remembering. So we have our three aspects of our existence: body, words, and mind. The gross body, then our voice. This voice is very important because of all the material elements, ether is the subtlest. And sound is produced out of ether. So the sound is the topmost of all of our gross physical activity. And also sound, being in the region of ether, is very close to the spiritual sky. If we take the geography of the material nature, then ether is very close to the spiritual sky. Sound, or we can say that if not close to the spiritual sky, but is close to our, close to mind. Because beyond ether is mind and intelligence and false ego, and then the coverings of the Maya, and beyond that is the spiritual sky. So sound is the best way to control our minds. Therefore, so much emphasis has been put on chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Now, there are favorable activities to nishtha are actually amanitra, manadatta, maitri and daya. Amanitra means desiring no respect for oneself. Manadatta means offering, giving respect to others. And maitri means friendliness. And daya means mercy. Name ruchi jive daya Vaishnava Shivan. Mahaprabhu gave this very simple policy that attachment to the holy name, name ruchi, jive daya, compassion for the living entities, and Vaishnava Shivan, service to the devotees. So, now, so in this way we covered so far up to nishtha, starting from Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nibritti, now we came to nishtha. So after nishtha, what is after nishtha? After steadiness? Ruchi. What's the meaning of ruchi? Taste. So there's a very, in Madhurya Kadambani, he defined, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur defined ruchi in a very wonderful way. He's saying, when the golden coin of bhakti, shining effulgently, by the fire of steady practice and propelled by its own energy, becomes fixed in the devotee's heart, ruchi appears. When the golden coin of bhakti, shining effulgently by the fire of steady practice. Bhakti has been compared to a golden coin, and steady practice is the fire. When you put fire, gold in fire, the gold becomes even more brilliant. Taptokanchana Gaurangi. Like Radharani's complexion has been compared to Taptokanchana. Tapto means hot or molten gold. Taptokanchana, molten gold, golden complexion. So when the golden coin of bhakti, shining effulgently by the fire of steady practice and propelled by its own energy, propelled by its own energy, it moves forward. Bhakti moves forward and carries the devotee along with him. Becomes fixed in the devotee's heart. Bhakti in this way becomes fixed in the heart of a devotee, and at that time, ruchi, taste, appears. And it is actually very significant when Vishnu Chakravarti says that propelled by its own energy. So that has been described like when one develops some taste, then things become very easy and effortless. He is giving an example. When a Brahmana boy learns the scriptures, studies the scriptures, then everything becomes easy for him. To study is no more an endeavor. Like we can also understand ourselves, like when you were learning the alphabet, it was such a big endeavor. A, B, C, D. It was such an endeavor. Then we learn the alphabet, then we learn the word. That also was another big endeavor. B H E bat, C H E cat. So, and we kept, and at that time practice was a big endeavor. But then, after a while, everything became easy. We can take a book and effortlessly we can read. Similarly, bhakti at this stage becomes effortless. At the stage of nishtha, there may be some effort, some endeavor, some force, some compulsion. But at the stage of ruchi, it is self-propelled. It keeps on moving forward on its own. Ruchi quickly produces a great attachment to the activities of bhakti. Ruchi quickly produces a great attachment to the activities of bhakti. They, at this stage, one automatically feels attracted to perform different practices of different devotional service. By constant hearing, chanting, and other devotional processes, one eventually develops ruchi. How does one develop ruchi? The question may arise. By hearing, by chanting, and rendering devotional service. But here we have to, here's a reminder, and that we have to be very, very careful about guarding ourselves against nama parādhas. There are four kinds of aparādhas, four kinds of impediments. One is aparādhattva. And we discussed the other day, the aparādhas is of two types, nama aparādhas and seva aparādhas, basically. But then he is pointing out that actually even seva aparādhas is not that important. Because nama aparādhas, because the pure name can take care of all the offenses. Even seva aparādhas will be taken care of by the holy name. But as long as we have the nama aparādhas, we cannot receive the mercy of the holy name. And of all the aparādhas, the most dangerous is, which is the most dangerous one of all the offenses? Yes. The first one, the blaspheming the devotees. So one should always guard against offending the devotees, hurting the devotees. Ruchi is of two types. Vastu vaiśiṣṭa pekṣini. Vastu means object or element. Vaiśiṣṭa vartini. That is, vaiśiṣṭa means significance or excellence. And apekṣini, depending upon. That which depends on excellence of elements. And vastu vaiśiṣṭa apekṣini, that which does not depend on excellence of elements. Vastu vaiśiṣṭa apekṣini and vastu vaiśiṣṭa anapekṣini. Depending on excellence of elements means appreciation of the kirtan only when it is pleasing to the ears, or appreciation of a discourse when it is skillfully delivered. This is just like a person with a weak appetite, when notified of a meal, will ask about the type and quality of the food. So, ruchi is the taste. The taste also has two stages. When it depends upon the elements, the excellence of the elements. And the next stage is when it does not depend upon the excellence of the elements. Like for example, if a person who doesn't have such strong appetite, if he's asked to eat some food, if he's invited to a dinner, he will ask, what is serving? And, you know, if the food is palatable, if it's nice, then he may take it. Otherwise, he says, I'm not interested. But if a person is really hungry, then he won't question what kind of food, just the name food will inspire him to partake to the meal. But similarly, when ruchi, when our taste is not that strong, then it depends upon the excellence of the element. Like, who is singing the kirtan? Is he a good singer, or who is giving the class? Is he a good speaker? Is he going to speak nicely? In this way, his involvement will depend upon these factors. But when he makes further advancement, his taste is strong, his taste becomes considerably strong, then he won't care for all these things. His main concern will be, the holy name is being chanted. Who is chanting, how is chanting is irrelevant. Oh, someone is talking about Krishna, let me go and hear. How eloquently the person is speaking, etc., is not a consideration at all. So in this way, the ruchi also has two aspects. We can say a weaker ruchi and stronger ruchi. When the ruchi is weak, then it depends upon the excellence of the element. But when the ruchi is strong, then there is no dependence upon the excellence of the element. So, I'll go to the next one. What's the next stage? Ashukti. I just got the excerpt from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's writing here. Instead of giving the points, in this chapter I just got the excerpt. And it's very very beautiful, very poetic. When the taste for bhajan reaches extreme depth, and Krishna becomes the very object of one's devotional activities, that is called ashakti, or attachment. So the definition of attachment is, when the taste for bhajan, bhajan means, Pratap? Bhajan means bhajan. Bhajan means? Bhajan means devotional service. When the taste for bhajan, a devotional service, reaches an extreme depth, and Krishna becomes the very object of one's devotional activity. When it becomes very profound and Krishna becomes the only object of his devotional activities, that is called ashukti, or attachment. Ashukti means attachment. Like, sometimes an example has been given, Prabhupada actually gives that example about this ashukti, that just the way a young boy becomes attracted to a young girl, like, it's a very intense attachment, and nothing can actually stop it. So if on the mundane platform one feels this kind of attachment towards another person, no one can actually imagine how strong that attachment can be when one comes in contact with Krishna. When one, through rendering devotional service, when one becomes more and more aware of Krishna. So, when that attachment develops, just like when a young boy and a young girl fall in love with each other, then they don't care for anything else. the rest of the world is meaningless. All it matters is the object of your love. Similarly, when one becomes attached to Krishna, then Krishna becomes the goal of all his activities and he doesn't care for anything else. So that is Ashakti and that is attachment. At the stage of Ashakti, the creeper of bhakti bears clusters of buds. These buds will in no time become flowers at the stage of bhava and in fruit at the stage of prema. So, in the creeper of devotion, in the bhakti lata, in the devotional creeper, at the stage of ashakti, the clusters of buds appear. The ashakti is like appearance of clusters of buds in a tree, in a flowering, in a tree. And like they're appearing there, and now it's a matter of time. Now it's a matter of time that these clusters of buds will blossom into flowers. And what is the flowers of the devotional creeper? What's the flower of the devotional? What the flowers have been compared to? The flowers have been compared to the bhava. And fruit, then the flowers will gradually develop into fruits. And what are the fruits of the devotional creeper? Fruits at the stage of prema. Ashakti polishes the mirror of the heart to such a condition that the Lord may suddenly be visible there. At the stage of ashakti, the mind becomes so purified, cheta darpana marjanam, due to the cleansing of the mind through chanting of the or practicing the process of devotional service, the mirror of the mind becomes so polished, so much free from any dirt, that the Lord may all of a sudden appear in the heart of the devotee at this stage. At the stage of ashakti, one may perceive Krishna face to face in the heart, in the mirror of his mind. Before the stage of ashakti, the devotee, after realizing that his mind has been overpowered by material objects and desires, by his deliberate effort, withdraws his mind and fixes it on the Lord's name, form, qualities and activities. In the stage of ashakti, however, absorption of the mind in the Lord is automatic without effort. One can very effortlessly become absorbed in Krishna. At the stage of ashakti, one spontaneously withdraws his mind from material topics and absorbs it in topics of the Lord. He will display extreme eagerness to associate with the devotees of Krishna and hear about Krishna. Seeing his condition, this is very, very nice. Listen to this carefully. Seeing his condition, his friends will apologize. Quote, he was all right before, but now his intelligence has become covered. His unacquainted neighbors will conclude that he is an idiot by birth. His unacquainted neighbors will conclude that he is an idiot by birth. The followers of Vedic ritual will consider him stupid. The adherents of the impersonal Brahma will consider him disillusioned. The followers of pious activities will say, he is fallen. The devotees will say, he has acquired a great fortune. And the offenders will say, he is pretending. But the devotee, far from considerations of respect and disrespect, having fallen into the current of the great celestial river of attachment, Ashakti to the Lord, will simply continue in the same manner. So, we can stop here. We can have some discussion. No, at the stage of Ruchi, it's... Yeah, that's true. Yes, right. From the term itself, it is clear that up to the stage of Bhava Bhakti, it is Sadhana Bhakti.
And where does that parallel along with Ruchi, Nishtha,
Samadhi? Yeah, I see. In Sadhana Bhakti again, there are two stages, right. Bodhi and Raganuga. Right. So, the Bodhi Bhakti comes up to the stage of Nishtha. And when at the stage of Nishtha, up to Nishtha, and at the stage of Nishtha, when one becomes fixed up, it becomes more or less spontaneous due to Ruchi and Ashi.
Ruchi would be more or less the Bhava because the emotional element is stronger. Did you
understand yesterday
the difference between
Ashi? Yes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is actually telling that. You know, he's explaining the glorious stage of Ruchi. And then he's saying that who can even imagine the stage of Bhava, the kind of, you know, experience he will go through at the stage of Bhava and Prema. So he, at that time, actually skipped Ashakti stage. You understand? Like, he skipped Ashakti, but then, he comes back to Ashakti. So actually it's true, like Ruchi, when it's fixed up, it's very close to Bhava. So it is the Ruchi. Ashakti is actually a stage between Ruchi and Bhava. Just an intermediary stage. Right. It's actually bud and flower is almost the same thing. Now it has already appeared. Now it's a matter of time. Blossoming. Yeah. Right. Right.
And that will be the transformation from
Sadhana
Bhakti to Bhava.
Yeah. Sadhana Bhakti to Bhava.
And then the turning will be from the Bhava to the Prema.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. You see, Bhava and Prema also is very similar. Actually, the stages are, if you like, Nishtha to Ruchi, Ruchi to Ashakti. It's all actually very, very close to, yeah, right, right. Yes, Paul. You see, up to the stage of Ruchi or Ashakti, and up to that stage one attains that, gets the taste of devotional service, it can waver. right? It can go back and forth, you know, sometimes steady, sometimes unsteady. Especially up to the stage of nishtha or steadiness, steady devotion. And after the steady devotion comes ruchi, a taste. After taste comes attachment. After attachment comes emotion. And after emotion comes love. Now, as I was saying, like, it is a specific, there's a specific mention of unsteady devotional service. The devotional service being unsteady. But transcending that unsteady stage, one becomes steady. So from the term itself, you can understand that from that up to that point, you know, one may waver, but after that you own, then it's a kind of a gradual progress. Provided he practices the process properly, and provided he does not commit offenses to devotees. Is it possible? Well, if it's not possible, then why should one endeavor? It depends. You see, the ashram does not really matter so much. Your material situation is not that important. It's your inner mood that is the main consideration. For example, if one sees that his house actually is the temple of Krishna, as an ideal householder must feel, his house is actually the temple of Krishna. His family, or the family members, are actually the servants of Krishna. And he himself is a servant of Krishna. He is taking care of the temple of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So in this way he doesn't have any feeling of me and mine. So for him, everything has become Krishna's. So that is, if you ultimately, it's the inner consideration. It's not so much dependent upon the external condition. In spiritual life, ultimately everything is dependent upon the mercy of the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is conveying the mercy of Krishna. It is not that the spiritual master himself has anything to give, but he is just acting as a via medium. And he is offering whatever is coming. He's offering whatever is coming from Krishna. Like regarding that, Prabhupada used to give the example of a peon. You see, the peon doesn't, you know, he is not writing the letters, or he is not carrying the money, but he is a via medium, and he is carrying it to the different recipients. I mean, a peon may be a poor man,
he may not have any money himself, but he is carrying millions of dollars and giving it to the recipients for whom the money actually has been sent. Similarly, the spiritual master is simply carrying to the recipients from Krishna. So, in this personal spiritual life, the importance of spiritual master is very, very great. And another consideration is that the spiritual master, who is the spiritual master actually? Ultimately, the very actual spiritual master is Krishna himself. And Krishna appears to the conditioned souls in two ways, in two forms of spiritual master. One is as the Chaitanya Guru, as the super soul. But as long as the living entity is in a conditioned stage, he cannot see the super soul in the heart. Although the super soul is there, the Krishna as the spiritual master is there, but he cannot see him. Therefore, the super soul, Krishna, becomes manifest as Mohan to Guru, as a manifest spiritual master. And the dealings with the spiritual master is transmitted to Krishna. So, in spiritual life, yes, spiritual master's role is very, very significant. And yes, ultimately everything depends upon the spiritual master's teaching. Jasya prasadat bhagavat prasadat, jasya prasadat nadati kuchati. By his mercy, one receives the mercy of the Lord, and if he becomes displeased, then there is no hope, there is no way. Yes, Rupa.
I'm wondering about that. Can an absence of physical relationship generally understand the spiritual master as a jiva? So, in that lack of physical presence, how many of the spiritual master can even be aware of the activities of the disciple when the disciple isn't there? So, what is the question of mercy?
Yeah. You see, as I said, that the spiritual master is like a peon. Now, he is not actually giving. He never thinks that he is giving, but he is actually acting as a via medium. Now, the spiritual master may not be aware of the condition of the, you know, heart of the disciple or the candidate. But Krishna, as a super soul, knows, sitting in the heart. And as one acts towards his spiritual master, Krishna will react accordingly. It's not that the spiritual master, the jiva as you say, or the person spiritual master, Diksha Guru, he is not antarjami or super soul. But the super soul aspect of the spiritual master is there. He is cognizant. And he is reacting accordingly. He will react accordingly. Like, for example,
not necessarily that the spiritual master is doing in his place, knowing the activities of all of the disciples
of the master. As I said, the spiritual master is not. And nor does he want to be. He is not a yogi. A yogi wants to be all cognizant. But a Vaishnava spiritual master doesn't want to be all cognizant. He doesn't want to be a superman. He simply wants to be the humble servant of his spiritual master. That is the bona fide of the spiritual master, that he simply is a humble servant and he always feels unqualified. He feels that he is not qualified to become a spiritual master. But upon the order of the spiritual master, depending upon his spiritual master's mercy, he goes forward and takes the responsibility.
From a disciple's point of view, you may understand that the spiritual master isn't always conscious of his individual activities, but sort of it's sort of like Guru Shakti within the heart of the who says the Antaryami spiritual master. That's Krishna.
Chaitya Guru.
Well, there's a difference between Chaitya Guru and
it's simultaneously one and different. Like, to the disciple, the spiritual master is non-different from Krishna. But the spiritual master never thinks that he is Krishna. Shakshad haritena shamastu shastrai ruktas tatha bhavvatoeva saddhi kintu prabhur ja priyaeva tasya vande guru shri charana. Another example can be given, like, say, one person comes representing one company, say IBM. So when you want to buy a computer and IBM representative comes to you, then to you he is IBM. He is not different from IBM. Although he knows that he is just a representative of IBM, he is not IBM. Right? And also, the way you deal with him, IBM will deal with you. Right? If you place an order to him, then IBM will supply it to you. Right? But if you don't place an order with him, then IBM won't care for you. So that is the meaning of via medium. So the spiritual master is acting as a via medium. In this way, he is representing Krishna. He knows that he is not Krishna. But those who are dealing with him knows that he is non-different from Krishna, because the way he deals, the way they deal with him, accordingly Krishna will deal with them.
From his whole life. So, in a sense, there was love for the order, but on a conscious personal platform, I might not have even been very much of a relationship. Sometimes Prabhupada speaks on a committee, and he says, if I think another who was saying, my dear so-and-so, I should be just another so-and-so. So, that's more or less what I was driving at, the actual relationship of love.
See, Prabhupada may have met Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur once or twice, but the love that he had for him is unique.
Yeah.
So that love does not depend upon how much time you spend with him. Like Prabhupada himself used to give the example of a bed bug. A bed bug may be very close to your body, but it simply creates disturbance to you. So, the physical closeness is not important. What actually matters is the inner closeness, internal dedication. And also we have to understand that Prabhupada loves the person Bhakti Siddhanta, not some impersonal feature, you know, as my spiritual master. No, he said, my Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he was so dedicated to him that he quit everything for his sake. At the age of 26, Prabhupada was the manager of a big pharmaceutical company. And for the sake of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave up his job. And since that time, Prabhupada's life was full of struggle. His family life was devastated. His wife and children turned against him practically. because of Prabhupada's love for Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it is a personal relationship, it is a personal definition. And one may not have spent so much time with him, but that inner attachment is there.